invariably stayed late to answer a barrage of questions. He spoke with authority and enthusiasm, apparently oblivious to the adoring gazes of his star-struck co-eds. Becker was dark, a rugged, youthful 35 with sharp green eyes and a wit to match. His strong jaw and taut features reminded Susan of carved marble. Over 6 feet tall, Becker moved across a squash court faster than any of his colleagues could comprehend. After soundly beating his opponent, he would cool off by dousing his head in a drinking fountain and soaking his tuft of thick black hair. Then, still dripping, he'd treat his opponent to a fruit shake and a bagel. As with all young professors, David's university salary was modest. From time to time, when he needed to renew his squash club membership or restring his old Dunlop with gut, he earned extra money by doing translating work for government agencies in and around Washington. It was on one of those jobs that he'd met Susan. It was a crisp morning during fall break when Becker returned from a morning jog to his three-room faculty apartment to find his answering machine blinking. He downed a quart of orange juice as he listened to the playback. The message was like many he received, a government agency requesting his translating services for a few hours later that morning. The only strange thing was that Becker had never heard of the organization. "They're called the National Security Agency," Becker said, calling a few of his colleagues for background. The reply was always the same. "You mean the National Security Council?" Becker checked the message. "No," they said, "agency. The NSA." "Never heard of them." Becker checked the GAO directory, and it showed no listing either. Puzzled, Becker called one of his old squash buddies, an ex-political analyst turned research clerk at the Library of Congress. David was shocked by his friend's explanation. Apparently, not only did the NSA exist, but it was considered one of the most influential government organizations in the world. It had been gathering global electronic intelligence data and protecting U.S. classified information for over half a century. Only 2% of Americans were even aware it existed. "NSA," his buddy joked, "stands for No Such Agency." With a mixture of apprehension and curiosity, Becker accepted the mysterious agency's offer. He drove the 37 miles to their 86-acre headquarters hidden discreetly in the wooded hills of Fort Meade, Maryland. After passing through endless security checks and being issued a 6-hour holographic guest pass, he was escorted to a plush research facility where he was told he would spend the afternoon, providing blind support to the cryptography division, an elite group of mathematical brainiacs known as the Codebreakers. For the first hour, the cryptographers seemed unaware Becker was even there. They hovered around an enormous table and spoke a language Becker had never heard. They spoke of stream ciphers, self-decimated generators, knapsack variants, zero-knowledge protocols, unicity points. Becker observed, lost. They scrawled symbols on graph paper, pored over computer printouts, and continuously referred to the jumble of text on the overhead projector. Eventually, one of them explained what Becker had already surmised. The scrambled text was a code, a ciphertext, groups of numbers and letters representing encrypted words. The cryptographer's job was to study the code and extract from it the original message, or clear text. The NSA had called Becker because they suspected the original message was written in Mandarin Chinese. He was to translate the symbols as the cryptographers decrypted them. For 2 hours, Becker interpreted an endless stream of Mandarin symbols. But each time he gave them a translation, the cryptographers shook their heads in despair. Apparently, the code was not making sense. Eager to help, Becker pointed out that all the characters they'd shown him had a common trait. They were also a part of the Kanji language. Instantly, the bustle in the room fell silent. The man in charge, a lanky chain-smoker named Moranti, turned to Becker in disbelief. "You mean these symbols have multiple meanings?" Becker nodded. He explained that Kanji was a Japanese writing system based on modified Chinese characters. He'd been giving Mandarin translations because that's what they'd asked for. "Jesus Christ," Moranti coughed. "Let's try the kanji." Like magic, everything fell into place. The cryptographers were duly impressed, but nonetheless, they still made Becker work on the characters out of sequence. "It's for your own safety," Moranti said. "This way, you won't know what you're translating." Becker laughed. Then he noticed nobody else was laughing. When the code finally broke, Becker had no idea what dark secrets he'd helped reveal. But one thing was for certain. The NSA took code-breaking seriously. The check in Becker's pocket was more than an entire month's university salary. On his way back out through the series of security checkpoints in the main corridor, Becker's exit was blocked by a guard hanging up a phone. "Mr. Becker, wait here, please." "What's the problem?" Becker had not expected the meeting to take so long, and he was running late for a standing Saturday afternoon squash match. The guard shrugged. "Head of crypto wants a word. She's on her way out now." "She?" Becker laughed. He had yet to see a female inside the NSA. "Is that a problem for you?" a woman's voice asked from behind him. Becker turned and immediately felt himself flush. He eyed the ID card on the woman's blouse. The head of NSA's cryptography division was not only a woman, but an attractive woman at that. "No," Becker fumbled. "I just..." "Susan Fletcher." The woman smiled, holding out her slender hand. Becker took it. "David Becker." "Congratulations, Mr. Becker. I hear you did a fine job today. Might I chat with you about it?" Becker hesitated. "Actually, I'm in a bit of a rush at the moment." He hoped spurning the world's most powerful intelligence agency wasn't a foolish act, but his squash match started in 45 minutes, and he had a reputation to uphold. David Becker was never late for squash. Class, maybe, but never squash. "I'll be brief," Susan Fletcher smiled. "Right this way, please." 10 minutes later, Becker was in the NSA's commissary enjoying a popover and a cranberry juice with the NSA's lovely head cryptographer, Susan Fletcher. It quickly became evident to David that the 38-year-old's high-ranking position at the NSA was no fluke. She was one of the brightest women he had ever met. As they discussed codes and code breaking, Becker found himself struggling to keep up. A new and exciting experience for him. An hour later, after Becker had obviously missed his squash match, and Susan had blatantly ignored 3 pages on the intercom, both of them had to laugh. There they were, 2 highly analytical minds, presumably immune to irrational infatuations. But somehow, while they sat there discussing linguistic morphology and pseudo-random number generators, they felt like a couple of teenagers. Everything was fireworks. Susan never did get around to the real reason she'd wanted to speak to David Becker, to offer him a trial post in their Asiatic cryptography division. It was clear from the passion with which the young professor spoke about teaching that he would never leave the university. Susan decided not to ruin the mood by talking business. She felt like a schoolgirl all over again. Nothing was going to spoil it. And nothing did. Their courtship was slow and romantic. stolen escapes whenever their schedules permitted, long walks through the Georgetown campus, late-night cappuccinos at Merluti's, occasional lectures and concerts. Susan found herself laughing more than she'd ever thought possible. It seemed there was nothing David couldn't twist into a joke. It was a welcome release from the intensity of her post at the NSA. One crisp autumn afternoon, they sat in the bleachers watching Georgetown soccer get pummeled by Rutgers. "What sport did you say you play?" Susan teased. "Zucchini?" Becker groaned. "It's called squash." She gave him a dumb look. "It's like zucchini," he explained, "but the court's smaller." Susan pushed him. Georgetown's left wing sent a corner kick sailing out of bounds, and a boo went up from the crowd. The defenseman hurried back downfield. "How about you?" Becker asked. "Play any sports?" "I'm a black belt in Stairmaster." Becker cringed. "I prefer sports you can win." Susan smiled. "Overachiever, are we?" Georgetown star defenseman blocked a pass, and there was a communal cheer in the stands. Susan leaned over and whispered in David's ear, "Doctor?" He turned and eyed her, lost. "Doctor," she repeated. "Say the first thing that comes to mind." Becker looked doubtful. "Word associations?" "Standard NSA procedure." "I need to know who I'm with." She eyed him sternly. "Doctor." Becker shrugged. "Seuss." Susan gave him a frown. "Okay. Try this one." "Kitchen." He didn't hesitate. "Bedroom." Susan arched her eyebrows coyly. "Okay. How about this? Cat." "Gut," Becker fired back. "Gut?" "Yeah. Cat gut. Squash racket, string of champions." "That's pleasant," she groaned. "Your diagnosis?" Becker inquired. Susan thought a minute. "You're a childish, sexually frustrated squash fiend." Becker shrugged. "Sounds about right." It went on like that for weeks. Over dessert at all-night diners, Becker would ask endless questions. Where had she learned mathematics? How did she end up at the NSA? How did she get so captivating? Susan blushed and admitted she'd been a late bloomer. Lanky and awkward with braces through her late teens, Susan said her Aunt Clara had once told her Gon's apology for Susan's plainness was to give her brains. A premature apology, Becker thought. Susan explained that her interest in cryptography had started in junior high school. The president of the computer club, a towering eighth grader named Frank Gutman, typed her a love poem and encrypted it with a number substitution scheme. Susan begged to know what it said. Frank flirtatiously refused. Susan took the code home and stayed up all night with a flashlight under her covers until she figured out the secret. Every number represented a letter. She carefully deciphered the code and watched in wonder as the seemingly random digits turned magically into beautiful poetry. In that instant, she knew she'd fallen in love. Codes and cryptography would become her life. Almost 20 years later, after getting her master's in mathematics from Johns Hopkins and studying number theory on a full scholarship from MIT, she submitted her doctoral thesis, Cryptographic Methods, Protocols, and Algorithms for Manual Applications. Apparently, her professor was not the only one who read it. Shortly afterwards, Susan received a phone call and a plane ticket from the NSA. Everyone in cryptography knew about the NSA. It was home to the best cryptographic minds on the planet.